Omagenatvrandasya genanjana salakaya chaksur undalitam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha shri chaitanya manobhishtam stapitam yena bhutale svayam rupa kadamayam didati svapadantikam vandeham shri guru shri yuta parakamalam shri gurum vaishnavam sha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shiva Sakam Svitam Sja Hey Krishna Karna Sindo Dina Bando Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchena Gorangi Radhe Vrindavaneshri Prishubhanu Suta Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanchakalpa Truvyasha Kripa Sindhubhye Vacha Patitanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shadwaitivadadhar Shivasadi Gaur Bhaktivrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
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 Nana Shastra Vicharinai Kanipano Sadharma Samstapako Lokanamita Karino Chibhuvane Manyo Sharanya Karo Radha Krishna Padaravinda Bhajana Nandena Matvaliko Vande Rupa Sanatana Raghu Yoga Shri Jiva Gopalago
I offer my respectful obeisances unto the six Goswamis, namely Sri Sanatana Goswami, Sri Rupa Goswami, Sri Raghunath Bhat Goswami, Sri Raghunath Das Goswami, Sri Jiva Goswami, and Sri Gopal Bhat Goswami, who are very expert in scrutinizingly studying all the revealed scriptures with the aim of establishing eternal religious principles for the benefit of all human beings. Thus they are honored all over the three worlds, and they are worth taking shelter of because they are absorbed in the mood of the gopis or engage in the transcendent loving service of Radha and Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
So thus far we've gone over, let me try and take attendance. What is your name again, Maharaj?
Mahodari Prema.
And your name, Maharaj?
Andrew.
Andrew. And Dhruva? What's your name here?
Avi.
Avi. Avi. Taking attendance is easier. So far we've gone over the preface in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, which deals with Prabhupada's Nectar Devotion, which deals with what is devotional service, definition. Then the first chapter, it explains about, or then we go to the introduction, and it gives the Parivasa Sutra, the characteristics of pure devotional service mentioned in the first chapter, and the second chapter, that's where we're on, is the second chapter. Where it mentions the first stages of devotion, going over especially Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti, with the emphasis being on that all the rules and regulations in Vaidhi Bhakti are all satisfied just by always remembering Krishna and never forgetting him. That Divine Ashram system or any other system is meant just to help us always remember Krishna and never forget him. That if one always remembers Krishna, then the result is that all the vidhis are satisfied, and if one never forgets Krishna, then all the nishedas are satisfied, all the things you're not supposed to do. Of course, remembering Krishna is in different stages. It's not simply by remembering Krishna, such as his name. The more advanced is remembering Krishna's form. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura has told us that when one chants Hare Krishna at the state of Shraddha, then one gets simply the opportunity to chant, that one has some faith that the chanting is beneficial. And at the state of Nishtha, when one chants Hare Krishna, then spontaneously one remembers Krishna's form. At the state of Ruchi, along with the form, one can feel Krishna's presence and remember his qualities. At the state of Asakti, then one remembers Krishna's pastimes, along with the form and the qualities. At the state of Bhava, one experiences the emotional ecstasy in relation to one's particular rasa with Krishna. At the state of Prema, then one, along with the feelings of ecstasy and the pastimes, the qualities, his form, then one also experiences intense love for Krishna. Now, in the third chapter, who's eligible to perform pure devotional service? As I explained before, that devotional service is defined by Rupa Goswami as ordinary devotional service, which is for Krishna with the intention of pleasing Krishna, something that's pleasing to Krishna. But then there's Uttama Bhakti, which also has the characteristics that it's only for Krishna and it's not covered by any other activity, either fruit of activities or cultivation of knowledge or yoga or anything. Now, the eligible candidates are explained in the third chapter. And here it says that the main eligibility comes from association with devotees. Prabhupada writes, on account of his association with the Mahatmas, or great souls, 100% in the devotional service of the Lord, one may attain a little bit of attraction for Krishna, but at the same time one may remain very much attached to fruitive activities and material sense enjoyment and not be prepared to undergo the different types of renunciation. Such a person, if he has unflinching attraction to Krishna, becomes an eligible candidate for discharging devotional service. In other words, some attraction for Krishna is the only eligibility for performing devotional service. It is not any material qualification. As it says in that verse, Krishna bhakti rasa bhavi tamati kriyatam kutopi labhyate tatra loyam mulyam ekalam janma koti sukritar nalabhyate. That the mood of devotional service, which means to be absorbed in thinking of Krishna and experiencing great feelings of love and ecstasy by doing so, it can't be obtained by any kind of pious activity. In other words, pious activities or even great amounts of erudition will not give us pure devotional service to Krishna. The only reason why one gets it is simply because there's the desire. And of course, there the word he uses, loyam, an intense desire, a great attraction for Krishna. That's the only eligibility to becoming Krishna conscious. Of course, some amount of knowledge has to be there. But that knowledge is different from ordinary knowledge. As Krishna says, janma karma chame divyam evam yo veti tatvataha tyaktvideham punarjanvat naitimam eti svarjana. The one who knows the transcendental nature of my appearance and their my activities does not, upon leaving this body, take birth again in the material world, but attains my abode. And then he says, bhakti mam abhijananti yavin yas chasmi tatvataha tatomam tatvato gyatva vishute tadanantaram. That if we want to understand this tattva about Krishna, tat means like that. Just like tat, T-A-T. So it's just like the English word, if you add an H to it, that. T-A-T, and you add an H to there, then you get that. So that means that which you can point out, which is perceivable. So tat means something which you can perceive with your senses. And va means having the quality. So having the quality of something that's perceivable is called tattva. Well, at least you came. Our class has been diminishing. She's very good at complimenting. It's one of the secrets of attracting all of her students. So tat means that which has perceivability. So Krishna can actually be perceived, therefore it's called, Krishna says, janma karma chamedivyam evam yoveti tatvataha. So this tatva means something which is a category that you can point out, and has a category, is something that you can point out and perceive. So anything that has the quality of being able to be perceivable is part of a tattva. And the tattva of Krishna is possible to be perceived by bhakti, by unalloyed service to Krishna, unalloyed devotion. So love for Krishna gives us the ability to perceive Krishna. So therefore Krishna in the Srimad Bhagavatam says, Vasudeve Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Priyojitaha Jana Yaisu Vairagyam Jnanam Tadahaitukam. And then Savai Punso Puro Dharmo Yato Bhakti Ahokshude Ahaituki Pratyataya Yatma Supersedati. In other words, if we perform unalloyed service to Krishna out of love, and Krishna is pleased, and he reveals himself. And when Krishna reveals himself, since Krishna himself is knowledge, then we become enlightened that Krishna is knowledge. Therefore, the only real knowledge, ultimate knowledge, can be perceived only by rendering devotional service. Only one who's performing devotional service to Krishna can actually understand things properly. Everyone else has to be confused. The more love and devotion, the more consistently we love Krishna, then the more Krishna reveals himself, and the more we become enlightened. But there is no material cause behind it. The only cause is pure devotion. Therefore it says here that attraction for Krishna and in the association of devotees is a sign of great fortune. Everyone else is actually quite unfortunate in this material world, because even if one is very successful in the material world, then that success means that either one is getting karma for this success, or else one is using up one's good karma. And the result is that one will have to take birth again. So when Krishna says, Tyaktva Deham Punarjanma, that one doesn't have to take birth again. So the only real successful person in this material world is someone who doesn't have to take birth again. Of course, we may be thinking that my birth is quite good. Prabhupada would always point that out, that one is thinking, well, my birth wasn't so bad. You know, I'm living in a nice country and there's plenty of food to eat and everything seems to be going all right. The only problem is that no one knows after leaving this body where we're going next. As a matter of fact, most of the plants and trees here and birds, they all thought they were good people in their last lifetime. And they were quite surprised to find out that they weren't going to heaven. They weren't saved. Although that everyone was telling them that they were saved. But they wound up in some other species of life. Therefore, in the association of devotees, that if one becomes attracted to Krishna, that's a sign of actual Bhagavan, of actually real fortune. And what is that? That fortune, how is it manifested? So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has told us, Brahmande Brahmite Kaun Bhagavan Jeev Guru Krishna Prasade Bhai Bhakti Lata Bhish. That the Bhagavan is one who's gone up and down throughout the whole creation. In other words, generally speaking, souls come here with the idea that there's some place here that we're actually going to become happy. And generally speaking, we're going to look in every single possible place to see if it's possible to become happy there. And when we realize we can, then the last thing we want to do is take up devotional service. That's the last thing on our list that we're going to try out. So when everything else fails, then we'll try it out. So that's called Bhakti Lata Bij. The bij, the seed, is that somehow or another we become inspired to become a devotee of Krishna, just like Prabhupada. One reason why Prabhupada inspired people, because, I mean, most people actually never really knew Prabhupada that well. They never really met Prabhupada or spoke to him personally. But one thing most of the devotees noted is that he was completely absorbed in Krishna consciousness, which manifested by the whole atmosphere changing, becoming more transcendental. At least that's my experience. That experiencing some devotees say their friends joined or whatever else, whatever other reason. But many persons, even non-devotees, I remember one time Prabhupada came into the airport and even when people there, they didn't even know what was going on, but they began to cry. Prabhupada was so powerful transcendentally. I remember one time sitting with Prabhupada with Satsrup Maharaj, and we were talking in Dallas actually. We were sitting in a room, his quarters, and it must have been like a couple of hours. So I was just sitting there and Prabhupada was, you know, talking to us, but I wasn't really, I listened to most of it, but I was just amazed how effulgent Prabhupada was. The whole room was so transcendental. And I just was realizing how humble Prabhupada was. He was such a humble devotee. That all his, because he was so absorbed in Krishna consciousness, that's where all this power was coming from. Therefore, in the association of personalities like Prabhupada, who was so absorbed in Krishna, then people got some attraction. I remember one devotee saying that they realized how happy Prabhupada was. And they wanted some of that happiness. Because that was quite apparent with Prabhupada. He was quite happy. He was prasanatma, joyful. I remember one time I was in Boston, 1969. And Prabhupada walked into the room. And the whole room became just like Vaikuntha. For everyone in the room. And Prabhupada just sat down and he looked at me. I could see, he could see everything. The body, the mind, the soul, everything. Therefore, in such one gets a little attraction because one realizes that there is a transcendental platform of consciousness and one becomes a little inclined to do something to achieve it. Of course, the nature of Maya is forgetfulness. Therefore, it's very easy to forget, and therefore that attraction can be easily lost. But the attraction is supposed to inspire us to perform the rules and regulations of devotional service. Prabhupada never said, you know, I'm so transcendental that I'll just zap you and you'll become transcendental too. No, Prabhupada said that if you want to become transcendental, then follow the instructions and gradually you'll become elevated. He never said that there was some easy way of doing it. Therefore, he recommended chanting 16 rounds, for instance, following the regular principles, getting up early in the morning. He He never said that I'm so elevated that you just surrender to me and I'll take care of you. I'll give you all the elevation. I'll accept, you know, you surrender unto me. You accept me in your heart and I'll give you, you know, purify you. Now, Sri Rupa Goswami, he explains about three different states of devotional service, three different types of devotees. The Uttama Bhakta, the Madhyama Bhakta, and the Kanishta Adhikari. So we should try to understand this. Of course, it's not our usual conceptions is to make everything very simple. Try and put everything within our realm of our perception. Therefore, it's very easy to make the quality of Uttama Adhikari and try and bring it down to our level of understanding. But in any case, it's presented here. The main emphasis is on knowledge, how much one knows. Of course, knowing Krishna is the main emphasis, how much one actually knows Krishna. And the main quality of that knowing Krishna is that one's ability to convince others about Krishna. Because after all, that's all we can really perceive. We can perceive what another person is doing, and we can perceive more or less if a person can answer my questions, if a devotee can answer my questions and give me some direction what to do so that I can make some tangible progress in devotional service. In any case, the qualities of Uttama Bhakta is that one has, as Prabhupada will explain later on, it begins with Bhava Bhakti. So the quality of Bhava Bhakti that's there to make one considered to be on Bhava Bhakti is what one has no material, one is not affected at all by material experience. Quite an elevated position. One has no more material, one is not at all disturbed by any material situation. And Prabhupada writes that the first class of devotee is one who strictly followed the rules and regulations. Now, when asked how you became a pure devotee, and if someone said, well, you know, I just received the mercy. No, one has to strictly follow the rules and regulations under the training of a bona fide spiritual master and sincerely obeyed him in accord with the revealed scriptures. Prabhupada, when he was living at Radha Damodar, for instance, he followed a very strict program. It wasn't that, you know, no one's watching me, I can just do whatever I want, and when I go to the West and preach, then I'll follow a more strict program. No, Prabhupada followed a very strict program. The Pujari, I was talking to one devotee who talked to the Pujari there. Pujari is only 15 years old when Prabhupada was there, but now he's the head Pujari there. He said Swamiji used to stay in his room all the time and followed a really strict program. Certain time he'd bathe, certain time he'd take prasadam, certain time he was chanting his rounds, he'd write his books, he'd come to Mangala Arati a certain time, but he never just came out, even during the festival days, he said, and just mingled with people. He was always following his very strict program. And whether the Prabhupada was a Nitya Siddha devotee, or in any case, he showed us how to become at least a sadhana siddha bhakta, one who becomes perfect by sadhana. The first class devotee is not interested in dry speculative methods meant for wasting time. In other words, one who has attained a mature determination in the matter of devotional service can be accepted as a first class devotee. Bhava is quite an elevated platform. Shantir avyata kala tvam virakta manushunyataha ashabanda smudkanta namagana sadaruchi asaktista gunakine pritistad vistatik stale ityado bhavanusyor jana bhavankores jane. There are certain qualities, detachment, not wasting any time, avyartha kalatvam, viraktir, shantir actually means peacefulness. Just like Pariksha Maharaj is sitting on the bank of the river Ganges and fasting to death. And he was not at all disturbed that in a few days the snake bird was going to come and bite him. Hare Krishna. No, we're just happy someone came. What's your name again, Manji? Yeah. Good, I got the right one. That he was fasting to death, but he was not at all disturbed by his situation. And avyarta kalatvam was an example of that, of someone who is not wasting time at all. Yes, that's a good example. He engaged all his energies in Krishna service. And viraktir, manushunyataha, there are many examples of these things. So the state of bhava, one actually has the opportunity to see Krishna sometimes. And at the same time, one's spiritual identity is understood. One has obtained one's sarup siddhi. Before that, there is a second class devotee, the Madhyama Adhikari, Madhyama Adhikari actually means someone who's on the transcendental platform. Madhyama Adhikari begins at Nishta. And Nishta means that whenever one chants Hare Krishna, then one remembers Krishna's form. That's one of the symptoms. And remembering Krishna's form, that means that one is not on the material platform anymore. So Madhyama Adhikari is someone who's actually on a spiritual platform, but has not fully understood one's relationship with Krishna. And before that, one is considered to be a Kanista Adhikari. But we shouldn't think that Kanista Adhikari is something, you know, cheap either. To be a Kanista Adhikari is quite exalted too. Prabhupada said in this material world, a first-class brahmana is considered to be on the level of Kanista Adhikari. One has to be a first-class brahmana. Because Kanista Adhikari is the in-between the spiritual platform and the material platform, which means that one is in the mode of goodness. Spiritual platform means Shuddha Sattva, and material platform, brahmana, means the mode of goodness. So all the good qualities, Sama, Dhamma, Tapasa, Ucham, Shanti Arjam Evacha, Gyanam Vijnanam Asvijyam, Brahma Karma Sabhavajam. Now these are supposed to be had by Kanista Adhikari, being controlling the mind and senses, Dhamma Dhammas, being equal minded, so Salacham, being clean, Shantir, being peaceful, having theoretical and applied knowledge and being religious. This is the mode of goodness. So the third class devotee, it says their faith is not very strong, because generally speaking, one doesn't have that much contact with Krishna on the Kanista Adhikari platform. But one has contact with the mode of goodness, so there is some faith, although it's not very strong. And who is classified as further classification, the neophyte devotee is made in the Bhagavad Gita. And there Krishna says, Chatura Vidapa Jante Imam Jana Sukritina Arjuna Arta Jignasi Artarati Jnani Chavara Tarshiva. So Krishna defines four kinds of people who approach him. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura has said that these four kinds of people are the members of the Vanashram system. In other words, the Vanashram system generally is an indirect method of approaching Krishna. Those who are wanting some, or in distress, they're considered to be Shudras. Those who are wanting some economic security, they're considered to be Vaishyas. And those who are inquisitive how to live better in the material world and manipulate things better, manage things better, they're Kshatriyas. And those who are searching for the knowledge of the Absolute, they're Brahmanas. And here are different types of persons have been explained, such as who is an example of a person who is a Shudra, lamenting, who approached Krishna, who is in distress. Yes, Gajendra. Gajendra, and then in the wanting something from Krishna, Dhruva Maharaj. Yes. And who is inquisitive? Who is the example of the persons who are inquisitive? There are the other ones. Sages at Naimisharanya. And those who were actually searching for knowledge, Brahman realized, were the Kumaras. So these persons, they had some material motivation, therefore they were actually not in the realm of pure devotional service. But when they took the devotional service, then they became purified, and then they became second or first class devotees. Therefore, those who are eligible, we can't think, well, Kanishtha Hadakari. Because after all, Dhruva Maharaj, or Gajendra, or the Sages, Naimisharanya, or the Kumaras, they were at one time in the realm of neophyte devotees who had some material aspiration. What to speak of ourselves? Now, out of these four kinds, because devotional service, although it's been explained that renunciation is not necessarily very favorable, dry renunciation, like the impersonalist, is not necessarily very favorable to achieve pure devotional service. Because renouncing everything makes the heart harder and harder. And because the heart becomes hard, therefore one will not be able to appreciate the name, form, quality, and passions of Krishna, but may think that these things are material also and reject them. Therefore, such renunciation is not good for pure devotional service. But the renunciation that comes from devotional service, that's very favorable. That there's renunciation that also comes from devotional service that not only doesn't attach one to the material world or detaches one from the material world, but also attaches one to Krishna. So such renunciation is considered to be favorable. And such a person has come to the platform beyond the material platform, beyond the bodily concept of life. The actually one Krishna says is a jnani, that such a person is eligible for pure devotional service. In other words, without becoming a jnani, without becoming free from the bodily concept of life, no one can actually be eligible for pure devotional service. Therefore, and that eligibility for pure devotional service starts at Madhyama Adhikari. In other words, at Madhyama Adhikari, one actually begins pure devotional service. Of course, Prabhupada was quite encouraging to us if he told us that actually none of you are devotees, although sometimes he said like that, that we're aspiring devotees. But since we come from the generation who wants everything immediately, Prabhupada had to encourage us in so many different ways. In any case, there are five processes, such as chanting the holy name, living in the holy place, worshipping the deities, or serving the devotees, or what else? Reading Srimad Bhagavatam. So any of these five processes, even a neophyte, if they execute them sincerely, can be raised to the platform of ecstasy. So it's not that because I may be a neophyte devotee, I may have material desires, and it may not be free from the bodily concept of life, therefore I'm wasting my time. No, one can also taste transcendental ecstasy by sincerely occupying oneself in these activities. The only criteria is that we can't maintain our attachments during the activity. In other words, at any moment, any time, we can focus the mind upon Krishna, and by doing that, experience transcendental ecstasy. The difference between that and saying a Madhyama Adhikari, a fixed Madhyama Adhikari, is that they could do it any time. But for us, it may take a little, just like we may have to be in kirtan for a few hours, or less than that, for some time, Then finally we realized that, what am I wasting my time here thinking about so many different things? Maybe I should actually think about Krishna while I'm in the kirtan, rather than thinking about what time is going to be over so we can take prasad. So at any time we can fix the mind upon Krishna and experience transcendental happiness, especially if it's done with some devotion. Therefore, even a neophyte can be raised to the platform of bhava or experiencing ecstasy, at least for that time, just by a little sincerity, a little effort in the devotional service. But when one comes to the steady platform, then one is experiencing that happiness, that enlightenment, consistently, and it's constantly increasing. Not only at the stage of nishta or asakti or ruchi or bhava or even prema, there's no, actually, as one makes more advancement, just like when one comes to the stage of prema, and then the other stages after prema, such as sneha, mana, pranaya, raga, anuraga, bhava, mahabhava, then actually the ecstasy increases even more. It's not that Radharani's thing, well, I made it, what else is there to do? No, when one comes to that platform, the happiness increases much more rapidly and much more, it's multiplied much more. The more one makes advancement, the more one makes advancement. So although it may seem at the beginning that our advancement is a little slow, but the nice thing about it is as soon as we sincerely try and make some advancement, that makes our advancement much more rapid. Just like a snowball at the top of a hill is very small, but as it picks up momentum going down the hill, then it becomes much more rapid. So similarly, as one makes advancement through the stages, then the advancement becomes more and more rapid as one goes on. So it may seem very slow at the beginning, although in one book, I think it's the teachings of Lord Chaitanya, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami is praying that my advancement is very slow. So he's thinking his advancement is slow. So it may seem like that, but actually advancement goes more and more rapid as one goes on, because the taste increases, and therefore naturally, as the taste for associating with Krishna increases, as we realize that just by hearing about Krishna or talking about Krishna, we can actually get transcendental pleasure. So one becomes more and more inspired, let me do it. One actually gets the result from the activities, so one becomes more inspired to perform the activities. But if we don't get the result from the activities, then of course then we become very skeptical and we start trying all different things out and trying to say, you know, but it's actually very simple. All we do is have to fix the mind upon Krishna. When they try millions of different ways of doing it, but unless one just fixes the mind upon Krishna, remembering what Krishna looks like, what Krishna's qualities are, what his associates are like, and what their mood is, especially the mood of unalloyed service. So if one has the mood of service towards Krishna and his devotees, then naturally everything else follows, because that's the whole entrance into pure devotional service, or even remembering Krishna, just that mood of trying to please Krishna and his servants. And from there, everything else follows automatically, his form, his qualities, his pastimes. But the more one develops that mood of service, then the more everything becomes naturally and spontaneously. So Prabhupada writes, any questions about this? Any comments? Yes. They want to find out, they inquire from the Brahmins how to arrange their activities in such a way as to get the best result.
they have faith in the Brahmins of Kshatriyas generally. They're a real Kshatriya. Now the state of Navamisharanya, they're put into that category because they were performing a sacrifice for the welfare of the world to improve the situation before the advent of Kali Yuga. It wasn't specifically to go back to the spiritual world. The sacrifice was for the benefit of the world. So that's more or less to protect the world at that time. It's kind of in the mood of the Kshatriyas. Although when someone as qualified as Suta Goswami came, then they immediately accepted him and he guided them properly, because he had the good fortune of hearing from Shukadeva Goswami. So he understood actually what the real benefit for the world would be, especially in Kali Yuga. So then they became pure devotees from hearing from him. So sometimes we don't understand what our good fortune is. Prabhupada said that here in India, if you come here in India, everyone seems like at first like there are many, many advanced pure devotees here, and everyone seems to be a devotee, and there's a little culture here, etc. But then after some time you realize that hardly anyone really believes in Krishna here. Mostly people are all tinged with Mayavadi conceptions. So Prabhupada said that at least in the Western world we may have engaged in all kinds of abominable habits, but we didn't know anything. That was our qualification. We weren't biased against Krishna. So when Prabhupada said something, therefore, because those who had faith in Prabhupada, they accepted it, whatever he said. They didn't argue. Just like Prabhupada had one friend, he used to meet him during his morning walks in Bombay, Dr. Patel. Those who listen to Prabhupada's tapes, they can hear Prabhupada practically for years and years. Prabhupada, every time he met him, he'd just argue with him. But then after a few years, then he became a devotee. It took a few years of associating with Prabhupada and Prabhupada defeating him. And then finally he realized that Krishna was actually a person. Although he always thought he was a devotee, but actually he was covered with Mayavadi consciousness. Therefore, it's not as easy as we think it is to become an actual devotee of Krishna. To have the good fortune of accepting that Krishna actually is God, he's a person, is quite rare. Even great sages, they don't always accept like that. Great elevated persons in the universe, they may not accept. After all, we hear Bhrigu Muni, he was with great sages in the heavenly planets, and they were wondering whether Brahma, Vishnu, or Shiva was God, who is actually the controller. For us it's easy because neither we know Brahma, nor we know Vishnu, nor we know Shiva. For us it doesn't really matter, because to a certain extent we don't believe in any of them, so any one of them could be God as far as we're concerned. But because Prabhupada said that Vishnu is God, alright, we'll accept it. So sometimes we find it difficult why anyone will accept Shiva as God. That's our good fortune in that sense, because we don't know anything, or we knew very little. Therefore it was easy for us to accept Krishna, and by engaging Krishna's service, therefore to whatever extent Krishna has revealed himself to us so far, therefore to that extent we actually have some faith in Krishna. Now we would have gotten caught up living in India if we would have taken birth here and through our beginning of our lives heard that Shiva is God. I don't think Brahma is not so popular here. But Shiva is God, then it may be a little difficult. I was down in South India for a month, and I went to right where I was. There was two temples, one little Krishna temple out in the middle of a field, and it was just in a little broken building, and it had a little. I was probably the only one who went there. Sat in the middle of an agricultural field, and it was just completely neglected. And then 15 minutes walk or 20 minutes walk from there was a Shiva temple, and that's where everything was happening. They had the Shiva Lingam, and they had to pay so much money to do anything, and they had bacharis there, and that's where people went to. Why? Because that's how people were trained up. Besides that, if you went to that little Krishna deity out in the field, you wouldn't get anything. But there was, you know, some hope that if you went to the Shiva deity, you know, they give you a house or a wife or a color TV, whatever that people are looking for. Therefore, in that sense, we're fortunate that we didn't know very much, and we may not know that much more now, but at least we believe that Krishna is God. And therefore, if we're going to do some service, it'll be for Krishna. Yes. Impersonalism? Well, impersonalism and materialism are more or less very the same. Yeah, there's not so much of a difference between them. Materialism means that you're just trying to lord it over the material energy, and impersonalism means you're trying to lord it over the spiritual energy.
So, in terms of the levels of materialism, impersonalism, impersonalism, etc., would you say that they were less or more back when you first became a devotee?
Well, I don't know. I mean, the contact, I think modern society has become more degraded than it was even when we were. It has become rapidly degraded in every respect. Although some people have become more elevated in the sense that some people have become more, you know, realize that they should be vegetarians, give up, you know, killing animals. Some people have given up even intoxication or other things. So in that sense, there's a much greater awareness in society. But at the same time, people in general are much more degraded than they were. You know, when I went to high school, no one I ever knew had parents who were divorced. It was unheard of. It was just like, and there was no intoxication. You know, there's no such a thing as veil. There are rumors that, I mean, I grew up in New York, which is not like, you know, the most pious place in the world. But still, there was no intoxication. There was no, you know, these things just didn't go on. There was no pornography. You know, even, of course, I don't think people knew vegetarianism wasn't very popular. But just in terms of that level of sinful activity. But now, the level of sinful activity is increase enormously all around the world. Here in India, India and Russia are the two biggest places in the world for abortion. And the biggest consumer of alcohol in the world is India. Yeah. Yeah. If you go from Vrindavan to Delhi, there's one place, one stop, a truck stop, you can see there are thousands of people buying alcohol there. Because, I mean, it's the biggest because they have almost 1 billion people here. It may not be proportionally, but when we were in Kerala, one man told us, what do you say, how many liters every day per person in Kerala? 4 liters a day of alcohol per person. What's that? Well, that's all they work for. I don't know if it's that much. I mean, it seems a little extravagant. I mean, you'd probably die if you took 4 liters of alcohol. You know, I don't think it's possible. But anyhow, it's quite a big consumption. And according to America, I don't know if it's true. I mean, of course, they exaggerate the figures, too. But in America alone, they spend $50 billion a year on hardcore pornography, which is more than the entire money people spend on movies, sports, magazines, and everything else. So those things didn't even exist before. So obviously you can't say the level of materialism has certainly increased. The availability of sinful activities. My mother, she lives in Las Vegas. And I went there to do Sankirtan book distribution in 1970-something. 75 I went there.
You know, it's, I mean, it was Sin City then, but it's unbelievable now. I mean, it's just like, have you ever been there? To Las Vegas?
The whole city doesn't sleep, right?
Yeah.
Down.
But it's unbelievable, just the enormity, or enormity may be the word, how big it is. There are hundreds and hundreds of casinos, and some of them, I mean, hundreds, the size of, like, you know, huge shopping malls. They have everything in them. They have aquariums, they have zoos, they have thousands and thousands. Each one of those casinos has thousands of rooms people can stay in, and they're always filled up, or at least they used to be filled up. They have everything you can imagine in things. And people just go there and just throw their money away. As one bus driver said when I was there, he said, "Welcome to Lost Wages," instead of Las Vegas. Yes. Yeah. Well, the people who are more aware are less degraded. Some people are more aware.
Right. But that, many people now taking yoga, not even the alcohol.
Yeah. Well, because there's always the divine and the demoniac. So previous ages, the divine people would live, you know, in the heavenly planets, or there would be places on the earth planet where there would be divine people. And the demoniac people would live in other places. And sometimes the demoniac would take over the heavenly planets, but that wouldn't be for very long. But in this age, the divine and demoniac are within everyone. Therefore, there is, by spreading the Krishna consciousness movement especially, then there will be a division within society. It will become more clear who's divine and who's demoniac. I mean, most people are innocent. It's just a question of education. People don't know that there's such a thing as the laws of nature because they've never been told or trained up. They've never seen it practically. Yeah. Well, there is, because the difference between consciously doing something and just being ignorant, innocent or ignorant, is that if you're informed about it, you may understand it's wrong and then change your activity. That means you just didn't know, you were in ignorance. Due to bad association, you were doing the wrong thing, but when you get into good association, you do the right thing. Yeah. Not really. The desire to be the Lord and the enjoyer comes from our inherent nature. That's our natural. Krishna has that desire, and we have that desire too. But we're just lording it over. We're just not doing it the right way, that's all. So in a bad association, we think we can become independent enjoyers and lords. And in good association, we realize if we're going to be lords and enjoyers, we have to do it for Krishna. So there's not really that much difference. It's just a question of association. So when people find out you can't be an independent lord and enjoyer here, those who are reasonable, who are not envious of Krishna, then they just take up becoming an enjoyer and lord in relation to Krishna. The only problem in modern society is there's intense propaganda that you can become an independent lord and enjoyer. That's the problem. And by that technology, people are a little bit fooled. But after some time, you know, technology will run out. I mean, what are they doing? It's so exciting nowadays. More or less, computers, they've run out of, you know, anything more exciting for computers. And then after a while, people just get bored. I mean, at least some people will get bored. And they'll look for other answers. But they always try and keep, you know, something new. Because after all, materialistic science has to promise the same thing that we're trying to promise. When it all comes down, the bottom line is you have to promise we can give you something by which you can learn how to become as perpetually happy. That's all people are really looking for, is happiness. So real knowledge means how to become happy. Whatever people are trying to learn, it's all with that idea, that this will make me happy. Materialists, they say that we can give you an eternal life full of bliss here in the material world if you just take our education. But any reasonable person can see it doesn't work. Now, whether or not Krishna consciousness will give us a life of perpetual bliss, you know, that also has to be seen. If there is enough devotees, whoever they are, they actually have seen to become, to get the results of Krishna consciousness, become actually happy, you know, consistently happy by the performing the activities of devotional service, then the result is so many people will take it up because they'll see that this actually works. While other people, they may go along trying to become happy in the material world in different ways, but no one's really that convinced in modern society that they're really going to become that happy. But they're stuck. Modern society has put everyone into a box, because even if you want the basic things in life, like something to eat and some shelter, you have to go along with the society. You have to go along with what you know, you have to do what you're supposed to do. And to keep people pacified, then they just throw in intoxication and illicit sex just so people won't complain too much. Because otherwise people couldn't tolerate the fact that they're working hard and they're practically getting nothing in return. Just an apartment, you know, and some transportation. So they have to distract everyone by giving them as much sports as possible and as much sense gratification as possible. Otherwise, people couldn't tolerate it. I remember I had a couple of jobs in my life before I became a devotee. One of the jobs is when I was in high school, I was an usher in a movie theater. And you had to watch the same movie. Horrible, stupid movies. Of course, back then they weren't, you know, so sinful, but they're just stupid movies. and no brains behind them. and the only thing you did was show them this flashlight so people could, you know, they didn't trip. They were walking for their seat. So it was such a boring job. And then I worked for, you know, a month or something, 2 months, and Wall Street taking stocks from one place to the next. I was a runner means that they gave you some kind of stocks or certificates and you had to take them from one place to the next. It was the most boring job. I said, oh my god, anything but this. You know, you can't, and people spend their whole lives just doing that. So you can't imagine what, if you have any consciousness at all, what kind of existence is that? So the only thing that, you know, people, they have to keep people distracted by a lot of sports, a lot of, you know, sense gratification. And just for the thrill, people are willing to work so hard for all their money and just go to, you know, a place like Las Vegas and just throw it all away because they have nothing better to do with it. Therefore, Krishna consciousness which offers real happiness, real knowledge, so simply, will obviously ultimately be victorious. If there is, and anyone who takes it up and tries to distribute it, then obviously they'll be successful. Anything else about this? What do you think, Mother Kurushami? Well, even Prabhupada writes at the beginning here, he said, it's not that we have to give up our material comforts. That Prabhupada said, you can live comfortably, but just to develop love for Krishna. So it's people, it's not that they have to live, you know, different color socks and Prabhupada one time said brahmachari means dirty. Live in a brahmachari ashram and then you, no, one could live with material comforts, but at the same time simply develop love for Krishna. Then you just add Krishna there, and then that's where the happiness comes from. Of course, modern society, which has so many distractions, it's not that they're very favorable, because the mind is just, you know, so easily distracted. So therefore, a little simpler living is helpful. But if people can't give up, you know, they don't want to live what they consider to be barbaric or primitive, they're not on that level. And to a certain extent, our temples are, sometimes they are barbaric and primitive. I remember the first time I came to a temple, it was in Buffalo, 1968. And I walked into the temple, my friend my school friend was Jagadish. We were friends in college. I walked in with him. As soon as I walked in, this huge cockroach just crawled right over my foot. The temple was just a little railroad shack, you know. So I said, I'm getting out of here. This place is...
He's like, no, come back.
No, somewhere another Krishna stopped. Rupa Nuga walked in and they started the program, so I couldn't get out. But then, you know, somehow or another Krishna gave me some mercy there. But at that time, you know, I thought, this is barbaric. It's so too primitive. So what to speak of other places? Well, then we went down to, Prabhupada wrote some letter. He wanted me to open a temple. So they sent me down to Miami to open the temple there. So I thought, well, you know, I'm going to become a temple president. I'll become a big-time devotee within the society. Because at that time, my first shrine, if you were just initiated, you were considered like a big devotee. So you actually had a spiritual name. And then when enough people got initiated, then you had to be a Brahmin to be big-time. Because no one is a Brahmin. Then when you had to be, then when all the Brahmins probably started to make Brahmins, then you had to be a temple president. So I said, wow, I'm going to become a temple brother. I'll be a big devotee in this society. So they sent me down to Miami. So I thought, well, you know, every place they sent me down, there must be a temple there. So I arrived there, and they didn't tell me where to go. No one knew where there was any temple, because there was no temple in Miami. Yeah, at that time there was Brahmananda Swami, Gargamuni Swami, Vishnu Jan Swami and Subal Swami. They had just walked down from Detroit. They had just been thrown out of the movement. So they hitchhiked and they walked down to Miami. So I met them down there. So the first night we lived in a bookstore. Yeah.
They had been thrown out?
Yeah.
What year is it?
1970. Yeah, probably told them to. They were preaching Mayavadi philosophy. Yeah. He was my hero at that time, Vishnu Jan. But then in New Vrindavan, I met them there first. First time I met Vishnu Jan in New Vrindavan, Maharaj. And I asked him a question. Philosophical question. He gave me such an answer, I was completely bewildered. I said, what? Anyway, so I met them down there. We had our first night. So I said, wow, this is pretty strange. But we spent the night in the bookstore and we had some milk and some bananas. That was our meal. And the next morning they told me they're all leaving. So Vishnu Jan Maharaj, he went to with Srinath. I don't know if you ever met Srinath. He was a brahmachari at that time. He went to Houston to open the temple there. And Brahmananda went up to Tallahassee with his servant. Subal went to Philadelphia. And Gargamuni and a devotee named Gopal, myself, we were there. So they said, where are we going to live? They said, well, we live out in the park. So we were living in the park, Coconut Grove Park, and our bathing place was a sink in the park. It's where we took our bath, and our place to cook was a grill. The grill. No, are you kidding? Didn't give me anything. I didn't even bring. All I brought was a sleeping bag and one dhoti. That's all I had in a toothbrush. Because we thought, you know, I thought everything would be down there. There was nothing down there. And this was in November. So then by December, it started to get cold, even in Miami. And we were living outside in different places because we didn't want the police to get us. So one time we were by a railroad track and the train came by and threw all this dirt all over us. So that wasn't the worst. Then there was a hurricane. Yeah, it was a hurricane. And Gargan, when he had us cooking chapatis out in the middle of the hurricane out of the park. That was too much. And the only thing Gargan wanted, because he was quite tight with his money, he wouldn't give us anything to eat. Yeah. So he had this policy, he wouldn't spend a dime on food. So the only thing we could eat was two chapatis a day. Two chapatis a day and a handful of apple chutney. So we used to cook at the grill. We'd make chapatis all morning. Get up in the morning, chant our rounds, and bathe in the sink. And then all morning cook chapatis on the grill, and he'd make apple chutney. And we'd have a kirtan, and all these hippies would come by. We'd put the apple chutney in the chapati and pass it out. And then we were allowed two chapatis ourselves with a little bit of apple chutney in it. That was our whole meal for the day. Yeah. And then after the hippies were done, we were allowed to go out and look for their remnants to see if there was anything left in the park. And then we'd go out and book distribution and collect money. And if we got back before the store closed, then we were allowed to get two bananas and a quarter of a pint of sour cream. But most of the time we never got back before that. So that went on for weeks. I was getting thinner and thinner. But we didn't know. We thought that was what you were supposed to do. And then finally, Sridham. Did you ever meet Sridham? So he came with... What's that? Yeah. So he came down with a vehicle, and they told me I should join Vishnu Jayantis Maharaj to open the temple there. So this was like how far from Miami to Houston? Probably 2,000 miles or something, 3,000 kilometers. So they told me to hitchhike. Hitchhike with a dhoti. So Gargamuni gave me, he wouldn't give me a dime. The only thing he gave me to eat was, the only thing he bought for me was 1/4 pound of fried chickpeas to take with me. Yeah. And the person who was the head of the health food store was so compassionate, he gave me 2 date balls. Little balls made of dates. So I immediately ate those when no one was looking. I took the 1/4 pound of fried chickpeas. And he just put me on the road and told me to hitchhike to Houston. So the first person who picked me up was completely intoxicated. He was driving hundreds of miles an hour, but on the wrong side of Florida. Anyhow, he finally let me off. And then this lady picked me up, and I said, I'm sorry, I can't get picked up by ladies. She said, don't worry, I won't hurt you. So then she left me off somewhere, and no one was picking me up. I was in the south of America, that time with a dhoti on, a shaven head. So no one would pick me up. So it was raining. It was raining for hours. So then finally I got a ride with someone going the opposite direction just to get out of the rain. Then after 2 days I made it to Alabama. And then the police picked me up. Oh yeah, they were really heavy. They were going, hey, why are you dressed with a dress? Why do you have a dress on? Because they never saw a devotee before. They said, hey, you know, hey boy, what you got a dress on? And that was the time when they were hanging people, you know. Then finally they let me go, and I was in Louisiana, which is probably worse. It was the Ku Klux Klan. So no one would pick me up. It was like hours and hours. So then I just started to walk towards Houston, which is like probably a 3-week walk. Then someone picked me up finally. We were going to see a Buddhist temple. They picked me up because they thought I was a Buddhist. And then I arrived in Houston. I found out the address that they gave me was wrong. There was no one at the address. So then I had to call up Seth Rup Maharaj, and he told me where the Vishnujan and Srinath were living. And I was so frustrated. I had this 1/4 pound of fried chickpeas. I hadn't eaten anything in 3 days. Then I finally ate it all. I just had a frustration because I couldn't find the devotees. And then when I got, I finally found Vishnujan and Srinath, and they were cooking. They handed me a plate which had, I think, something like 4 or 5 chapatis on it. So I thought we were supposed to share it between the three of us. Because I hadn't eaten more than 2 chapatis in so many weeks. What's that? Yeah. No, well, we were living in a garage apartment, and upstairs in a garage apartment. So then they said, no, you can eat all the chapatis. So I was quite happy. So the point is, sometimes it is a little austere. And I don't think most people are going to be too enthusiastic. So Prabhupada was saying that actually he didn't think that everyone in America was going to have to go through this in order to become a devotee. That one could live comfortably, but at the same time one should chant Hare Krishna and follow, you know, follow the principles of Krishna consciousness. Anything else? Yeah, got so many stories. Get better and better as you go on. It's true. I was in all those exciting events. Oh yeah. You mean now or then? Now I just tell them we're monks. These are all about reincarnation, yoga. Usually I tell them this is about yoga, meditation, reincarnation, karma, and peace or wisdom and freedom from stress. You've heard stress before, right? Most people say, yeah. You know, they say, well, I don't know about stress. Like, yeah, you don't look very stressful, do you? I just preach to them. Most people I just preach to them. Give them a book. Frankly speaking, most people, they don't hear most of what you're saying. All they do is see whether you're enthusiastic or not. And as long, you know, as long as they're not Christians or something, you know, it doesn't really matter what you tell them. As long as you're happy and enthusiastic. And generally speaking, the less you tell people, the better it is. All you do is have to ask them something that they say yes to, that they're in agreement to. Yes. Just about 19. Something like that. Okay, thank you very much for coming. It's been very nice being here. We just hope these books are so nice, we just keep on reading Nectar of Devotion and Prabhupada's other books. Just keep on hearing about Krishna, and then everything will be there. Not a very complicated process. The only problem is that Maya will always tell us to do something else. Since Maya has trained us up, it's very easy to do something else. But somehow or another, if we just stay in the association of devotees, hear about Krishna, then everything will be there. So thank you for coming here, allowing me the chance to hear and chant about Krishna. We just continue on. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Granth Rashi, Nectar of Devotion ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Gaur Premanande ki jai.